Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, scumbags. This is the Scummy Mummies podcast with your hosts, Ellie Gibson and Helen Thorne.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. It's me, Helen Thorne.
And it's me, Ellie Gibson.
And I am delighted, nay, honoured that we have...
Good, because that sounded sarcastic when you started. I am delighted. I'm so delighted. I couldn't be more delighted.
I'm thrilled. It's fine.
Yes.
It's absolutely excellent that we have the wonderful Kat Sims on the podcast today. Hello, Kat.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my God. We are thrilled. AKA not so smug now. Are you smug now or not smug now?
Never smug. Oh. I used to be smug. Mm. I used to be that... Oh, God, I used to be that awful person that was like, my kid's only going to have wooden toys and organic...
Pre-kids, you mean?
Yeah, yes, pre-kids. Yeah. Organic food. And now they're lucky if they get, you know, a frozen chip to suck on.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to have barbecue crisp for breakfast, like we are having like, now.
Exactly, the breakfast of champions.
Mm, we're sitting in my messy house.
We're doing it
at Thorne's house this time instead of Gibson's. We're going off-piste.
And also, can we say we're sitting in your house with a bowl of crisps, and I'm going to publicly shame you on your own podcast, a packet of cigarettes, Helen. You said you were going to give up when you got back from Australia. Then you were going to give up after Edinburgh. Then you were going to give up for the marathon. You've done the marathon. You've done amazing, by the way. Congratulations.
Yes, well done. A round of applause for that.
Yeah, but stop taking pride in that, and now you need to feel shame. That you're still smoking. And Julia Samuel, the psychotherapist who we had on the podcast, said that she was going to punch you in the face if you didn't get. She's a very nice, genteel lady. So get ready for a punch. When are you going to give up?
I will give up.
When?
Oh, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because it's nearly my birthday.
Yeah. And then it's Christmas.
And then it's Halloween. And then I'm on holiday by myself.
Bonfire night as well.
Yeah, it's my cup of chimney. And then I'm having...
Michaelmas, don't forget Michaelmas.
Yes, winter solstice.
Yes. Then 12th night, obviously.
Yes, of Epiphany.
Yeah.
maybe January. That sounds...
January sounds like a good time to give up smoking.
Yeah, that's miserable. So let's fucking end that misery. Yeah.
Just wanted to get that out of the way. Publicly shame you first. And now we can talk about you, Kat. Thanks so much for coming.
You're so welcome.
Because Kat, you're very good at giving up things.
Well, I mean, I've had to be, haven't I? Yes, I have. I've given up the booze.
Oh.
And the drugs.
Oh. Wow.
All the fun stuff.
Look how clean you are now, Kat. Look at that.
No, I'm not sure it suits me, cleanliness.
No, well, I am a walking mess in all areas, inside and out, inside my lungs, outside my house.
So you're in that sort of first wave of mummy bloggers or influencers or whatever you want to call it.
None of those are great words.
Yeah.
But you're in that first wave, I guess, like we probably were, of sort of going, do you know what, motherhood's actually quite hard, isn't it? Quite shit.
Yeah, when I started, I remember there only being one other person that was doing something similar, which was Steph, Don't Buy Me Flowers.
Yeah.
And
Stephanie, as I like to call
Stephanie.
Her.
Stephanie. Mm. Yeah. And I just got to a point where I was like, this is shit. And everybody around me is going, this is amazing. And she's so beautiful. I feel so blessed. And I was like, I don't feel blessed. I feel like I want to put her out by the bins. And I'm really shit at this. And I don't like not being good at things. Mm. So I really struggled. And I thought, well, I'll write about it.
Yeah.
Because I had always written. That has always been my first love. And I put it on the Facebook. And this was before I even had a blog. And I think overnight it had like 3,000 or 4,000 views.
Wow.
Which at that time was you know, considering I had about 70 friends, you know, yeah, it was,
at that point, that was, the population of London was only about 6,000.
Yeah, yeah, so in the, right, back in the day. Yeah. And I thought, well, there's something in this. And it really helped me. Mm. Like, it's not, yeah, it's not like a selfless endeavour, this. Like,
everyone in terms of money,
like, yeah, in terms of like why I do what I do, I'd say it's probably, you know, 50% selfish, 49% money, 1%. I'm joking. I'm not really. I am.
Cause, and you've written about, you know, with that first baby as well, was, there were some issues around bonding there. Is that you didn't have, is that right? You didn't, yeah, have that thing that you see in the movies where the baby comes out and you cry and then you're connected. You have the film, no, this invisible street. You didn't have any,
not
of
at
that,
all. No, I didn't have anything. I did. I had that feeling like if she was going to, I'd have jumped in front of a bus for her in like an instinctive
primal,
biological primal, yeah, way. Mm. But emotionally, nothing, mm, like nothing at all. And I faked it, thinking, well, you fake it till you make it. And I also had
all
like
the lovely Facebook posts of like,
oh yeah, I did all of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had depression before. And when I was going through that first year with Billy, I was like, well, this isn't depression. This is just, I've had a new baby and I'm not sleeping and I'm tired and this is normal. And it wasn't normal. And nobody told me it wasn't normal until a year in. And they were like, no, actually, this is not normal.
So I was going to say, at what point did you realise that was, that was?
Yeah,
was it you or was it someone else going,
it was,
no,
the
you're
doctor,
being mad?
Yeah, yeah, it was a medical professional who
officially
said,
insane,
you're fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, officially, here are the meds, take them. Yeah.
And what were the symptoms that made him say that?
I mean, it was really bad. I was really depressed. I was having like suicidal thoughts. It was miserable. I would get up in the morning and the only thing I could do was like rug us up, because she was born in November. So I'd like rug us up and I would walk around our park for like hours until lunchtime. And then I'd come back and we'd have like a little rest. And then I'd just walk around the park again. I mean, I think I was doing like 12, 13 kilometres a day because that was all I could do. Mm. And it was just, my family was so far away and I didn't have any friends. And obviously Jimmy was touring and I was just on my own. Mm. And just hating every single minute of it.
It's lonely. It's really lonely. And also it's the really pressure lonely on you. I think, you know, we were, again, you know, that first wave of sort of social media and Facebook was just sort of emerging and things like that. But yeah, you sort of think, is this it? Yeah. I'm meant to be all joyful and this is all meant to be lovely.
Yeah.
But it's so hard and it's relentless and you have no control. And I think when you've had, yeah, a career and all those things, and then this is it, and you've got to feed it and make it sure it's alive, and it's relentless.
Well, and I was always told, like, if you work hard and you prepare, you'll be successful. So I was like, right, I'll work hard and I'll prepare. So I read all the books and I wrote a birth plan that was 4 pages, double-sided, colour-coded and laminated. So can only imagine. Yeah, no, that's basically what the midwives did when I gave it to them. And I thought, well, this is it. I'll smash it. I am as prepared as I could possibly be. And from the minute I went into labour, I was lost, like completely lost. She was back to back, so the pain was weird.
Oh,
I was
outrageous.
Vomiting everywhere.
Yeah.
It was just awful. And that feeling of like failure and not being able to control anything just never left me for that first year. And yeah, it just felt like I was awful. And then, and of course, you're seeing in real life at playgroup all these people that are like smashing it and got makeup on and look lovely, and I was just like, this, I just felt like nobody else got it.
Yeah.
And you couldn't say it out loud then. Nobody was saying it's all right if it's hard, you know. Nobody was saying that. When I remember when I called the midwife, or no, the health visitor, after I gave Billy her first bottle of formula when she was 9 weeks old, because breastfeeding was horrendous for me that time, I called her up hysterical. Like, that should have flagged with them that I wasn't right. But hysterical, saying, I just need you to tell me I'm not a terrible mum. And she went, well, you can undo the damage when it comes to weaning.
Damage!
And that one sentence has, like, I think that was, like, the last thing that just sent me into this spiral of depression. Mm. You can always undo the damage you've done when it comes to weaning. And I was like, fuck.
I'm sorry, I'm just really, I've just got tingles.
I know.
Those words were damaging. Mm, not
they were
the formula.
Incredibly damaging.
God, I want to cry.
I do want to say, obviously, just in case it bears repeating, that is obviously bullshit that there's the damage and all
that. Oh, yeah.
In case anyone's listening and you're already in a dark place and you're like, damage! Like,
no,
I can imagine that,
absolutely.
You know.
Formula is absolutely fine. It's absolutely excellent because your baby is fed. And that's...
Both our kids had it, didn't they?
Yeah,
absolutely fine. Yeah, yeah. And breast milk.
The formula is probably cleaner than the milk that I was producing, to be honest. honest.
Well, and we were told, though, when I had Billy, which is nearly 9 years ago now, we were made to feel like it was a combination of like cocaine, tequila and dung beetles. Do you know what I mean?
That's mine actually was, to be fair, but yes, yeah.
But it's just that really, really resonated with me. And I think people sometimes underestimate how one sentence or one comment that they read can just destroy somebody at a vulnerable moment.
This is why you've got to watch what you say to people.
Totally.
It?
And this is a lot of what I try and do on Instagram, although I perhaps didn't do it so well recently. But, you know, I get really angry with these people that put these comments up responding to anything controversial. You know, the three things of babies that you can't talk about: breastfeeding, bottle feeding, co-sleeping, and the other one, which I can't remember what it is.
Control of crying?
No. Yes. Yeah. Sleep training.
Yeah.
And, you know, people put these comments up and they go, well, this survey says this and you caused this kind of damage. And I just think, hang on, it's so damaging because you're not an expert. You don't know. You're not a doctor. Let's not put this out there because it's misinformation and it could be doing somebody real harm.
And also just making people feel, well, most mums will do the best that they can.
Yeah, and we're all running on empty at that, especially at that stage. Like, the hormones are crazy. You're knackered. You're exhausted. You don't need little Janet on Facebook saying, well, you know, you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, and why is she saying it?
Yeah, fuck off, Janet. Yeah.
Well, it's about Janet, isn't it, obviously? Fuck you, Janet.
Fuck damn you, Janet.
So going back to that diagnosis, and how did you feel when you know, when another person said to you, no, look, this isn't normal, this is what's going on?
Relief.
Yeah.
100% relief. And I've found that with, like, any diagnosis I've got, that when you know what the problem is, it just becomes so much smaller and manageable. Because I was convinced it wasn't depression because I'd had depression before and this was so different. And when I finally got that and I was like, oh, I'm not a terrible, awful human with a cold, dead heart. I am ill.
Yeah.
And I took the pills and I was like, okay, now. And it just got better and better from there on. But just knowing that in itself, I think even if I hadn't taken any meds, that probably would have really helped me just to get that diagnosis and have somebody go, there's nothing wrong with you as a mum. But your brain is a bit fucked right now.
Yeah.
So you would recommend that to someone who is in a dark place, like go and see your GP or see...
100% talk about it. And like some people just feel they can't. I always say, like, talk about it, practice talking about it. Talk, like, say it out loud when you're on your own. Say it to your cat, say it whatever, because just saying it makes it easier. But go to the doctors. If you are in a dark place, just go, because they get it. And there are meds that can help you. There's therapy. There's all sorts of things. But just please go and speak to somebody.
So you wouldn't recommend doing 25 laps of a park for 3 hours with a child?
No. Or, you know, 2 bottles of Chardonnay in the evening.
Right. Okay.
You know, that generally. I mean, it might work for somebody. Just it didn't really work out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually. Yeah.
And then things got so much better that you went on and had another child. And
I know. Do you know what though? My second one, she like healed me a little bit because I did hypnobirthing, which I was never going to do because I was just a northerner and I was like, it's a bit too vagina whispery for me. But we have a very good friend, Holly, who did a lot of hypnobirthing. She was like, try it. So I did. And I think we trekked all the way over this way for it again. And funnily enough, there was one thing in there. I thought the whole thing was brilliant, actually, but there was one thing in there that they said that completely transformed my whole birthing process. And it was like, she said, basically, when you give birth, your uterus is a muscle that contracts and relaxes. And you'll know this, marathon running. Well, you know as well, because you're a runner. For a muscle to work really well, it needs oxygenated blood, right? And if you freak the fuck out, you start creating adrenaline and all that oxygen-rich blood goes to your like arms and legs for your fight or flight response. Your uterus still has to do the thing, but it's doing it on like minimal resources. So it's going to be longer, harder and more painful.
Right.
And I was like, so we just have to keep calm. She's like, that's it. You just have to keep calm. And I was just like, well, that makes scientific sense.
Yeah.
So second time round, she went into labor, headphones in. I was like, I'm out. Peace out. You birth pool, all the rest of it. Tell me when it's all over. Didn't say a word. And it was a completely different experience.
Yeah. And also the roll of the dice is that, you know, nothing went wrong and like
totally.
Well, yes, you can say stay calm, but it's not always possible when they start coming and going, or the heartbeat slowed.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to remain calm. There's a cord wrapped around the neck. But if all things are going well, then actually that is a fantastic kind of strategy and a process, or you know,
totally.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was a game changer for me. I remember sitting in the birthing pool afterwards going, I'm a fucking rock star. And then they cut the cord, and I literally was like, looked down at the water that was full of like,
oh, gross. Yeah.
And all the rest of it. And I was like, huh! Yeah. Get me out of here.
Yeah, it's like vagina minestrone.
Oh, that's it.
The old uterine cup of soup.
Yeah. 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 Hugo was born just over there in a similar kind of
situation.
Bisque. Yes.
Chowder.
Oh, yummy.
Literal clam chowder.
Yeah, exactly.
Apologies
right.
if you're eating.
Sorry, Mum.
So moving on from the baby shit. After you had these two babies, and then you became an Instagram sensation, and then you became an alcoholic. Tell me about that.
Listen, on my list of things to do, it's like one of those things. People, I didn't ever walk into like.
Was that on your mood board?
To the careers officer and say what I really want to be.
And I use that word only because you've said it to me privately before. And if it's not okay to say,
no, it's absolutely okay.
Fine.
In fact, I'm really passionate about using the word academic, alcoholic. I don't know what happened there, because I think that word is so stigmatized that I think it often stops a lot of people asking for help, because the first place you kind of think of if you need help is Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm. And I think because of the very name, people go, well, I'm not going there, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. And actually what I learned about alcoholism is that it doesn't look a certain way. I'll be honest, I thought that alcoholics were like on park benches, drinking out of paper bags. They've lost their jobs, their families, they're, you know, had a rock car crash bottom. Or rock bottom.
And you're like, I'm walking around the park with the alcohol in a sippy cup. It's not me. That's not me.
That's not
I've got
me.
Lipstick on.
But it is that. It's like I had a job and I had two kids and I was successful. In fact, I was my most successful when I was really kind of hit rock bottom and went sober. And there's no tick list that you have to, you know, you don't have to be drinking in the morning. You don't have to be hiding stuff around the house. I wasn't doing those things, but I was drinking a lot every night, at least.
What do you mean by a lot? Yeah.
Well, I mean, probably two bottles of wine.
Right.
Okay. And one bottle of wine didn't touch the sides.
Okay.
Two bottles of wine, I was like, okay, yeah, I'm ready. And then maybe I'd have, and by this point, everybody had gone to bed. So I was up drinking alone. And then maybe I'd have a gin tonic or whatever. And then later on, you know, I started moving into drugs as well and I could see how it was progressing. But essentially, I just got to a point where I was driving up and down to Devon to look after my parents because dad had an operation and Mum was sick. And I remember waking up every morning at 4 a.m. with a panic attack.
Yeah.
And I knew it was because I was drinking and because I was traveling between the two places. I was kind of falling through the cracks in terms of people noticing how much I was drinking. Mm. And I just got to a point where I was like, my life is officially unmanageable. Like, I cannot look after my kids, my parents, my job, my responsibilities, and be waking up at 4 a.m. every morning with this kind of anxiety.
Yeah.
And even though I wasn't drinking in the morning, I was thinking about my drink in the morning. So, like, I'd wake up and I'd be like, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, sometimes 3 o'clock, I can't wait for that glass of wine or that cold beer. Mm. And I would sometimes be like, oh, no, I've got an empty day. Who can I call to meet for lunch? Because that would be a good boozy lunch. I mean, I never went out for a boozy lunch and didn't come home at 6 in the morning. Mm. Like, that's how it went for me. Once I started drinking, I never knew when I was going to stop.
Right.
And getting into drugs, the reason I started using drugs was because I would go into blackout. And then terrible things would happen in blackout. And
do you mean passing out, or do you mean not being able to remember?
Not being able to remember, like, right. Black, like I hadn't passed out, but
so frightening.
Nothing, I couldn't remember.
Really
black hole.
Yeah.
And because I'm an addict, my brain didn't go, "Oh, well, drinking's a problem." My brain went, "Blackout's the problem." So how do I stop blackout? Oh, I know. If I start taking cocaine, blackout stops. It keeps me straight, and I can drink more and for longer.
And I'm really fascinating and sexy and I can dance.
All of those things.
Oh, all of them.
I mean, I can't sleep, but a Xanax will sort that out. So, you know, all of a sudden.
Did you have hangovers? I just, You weren't like, you weren't poorly the next day.
The idea
of doing drugs and that much alcohol makes me think I'll have to lie down for 3 weeks.
I was always more comfortable with the, like, drug hangover, the anxiety, emotional hangover. I could never stand the physical vomiting, like, headache, sickness of an alcohol hangover.
Right. Mm.
And so I always chose that. And that, you know, I always chose that. That's kind of how I functioned. Mm. Not every night, but then eventually, you know, I'd be at home. Towards the end, I'd be at home on my own drinking and I'd do a couple of bottles of wine and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be a bit. And then I'd start doing drugs on my own. And I was like, you know, when you're cutting up your kid's rubber reusable spoon, straws, to like, you're like, this is not good. It just wasn't. And I knew that it's progressive. Experience had shown me that. I'd started drinking for fun and then fun and consequences, and then it was just becoming consequences.
Yeah.
And it was only going to get worse. And so I just remember saying to Jimmy, I think I need to go to a meeting. And we've got lots of friends in the 12-step programs of various different kinds. So I was kind of aware of it. And I went to my first meeting and I was like, I feel like this is my people.
Yeah,
because it wasn't loads of old men with ruddy faces talking about how they lived on a pot. I mean, there were some of those people there, of course, but not. But actually more, it was more people just like me.
Yeah.
Like women, men, loads of young people. But, like I'm seeing loads of people in AA in their early 20s. And that for me was really revolutionary because everybody's alcoholism was slightly different. Some people were there because they were massive binge drinkers. They could go 2 weeks without drinking. But when they went on a binge, they'd end up in New York or, you know, they'd end up in jail or they'd just never end. And, you know, and it was really interesting for me to understand that alcoholics don't look a certain way. And so I really want, coming back to your original question, which was about 7 hours ago, that word alcoholic is one that I really embrace and identify as, because I just want people to be able to look at me and go, well, she doesn't look like an alcoholic, but she is. And maybe it's not as shameful and as horrific as I think it could be.
Yeah.
You know, and now, funnily enough, hilariously, I always thought I didn't have an addictive personality because with smoking, I could always buy a packet of cigarettes for a night out and I would smoke them. And then maybe if I had a few left, I'd do it over the next few days. But when that packet was gone, I wouldn't buy any more. As soon as I finished drinking, 20 a day. So it was like my addiction went, what the fuck else can I do?
Yeah.
20 a day. And I have to be really, really careful with cigarettes, sugar and spending. Because those are my like three.
That's dopamine hits, isn't it? That's a sort of like dopamine hits. Yeah, no, and it's like Instagram and all those sort of things. You're like, ah, oh, what gives me that little buzz? And yeah.
So here's the thing, right? So yes, first of all, I think it's amazing what you've done, and well done, obviously. Not to patronise you too intensely.
No, I'll take that.
We're so proud of you, Kat.
Yeah, we're very proud.
I'm a year next month.
Bloody hell.
Like, well, November 26th.
What are you going
to
do?
Russell, what happens is Russell Brand send you a telegram.
Yeah. Or something like that. That would be amazing.
Maybe a dick pic.
Even better. I think I'm just going to have dinner with my sponsor and sober mates and just do that. It's a big thing, the year. Like, I never thought that I would go a year without booze.
That's extraordinary.
And now I can't think about it. I can't imagine drinking.
Can I ask a really dumb question?
Sure.
What is a sponsor and how does that work? How do you get a sponsor?
You are. Basically, you get a piece of paper with a little table and you put how many miles you're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Say, oh, 10
how many days
miles.
You're going to run.
I'm going to not drink for a year.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
drink 10 shots of
give
vodka.
Give me 10p a day.
Yeah, it's just like that.
Per glass of wine.
Yeah. It's not as profitable as that, unfortunately. You basically just ask a person. So you go to meetings and you start getting a feel for it. And if you see somebody or hear from somebody that you like the look of, they say it's like you see somebody that you and you want what they have, then you can just ask them to be your sponsor. And then once you've got a sponsor, you can start work, they'll work through the steps with you, the 12 steps. So I'm on step 8 now. And they are
step
just
one.
They're just your person.
Have lots of fun. Step 2. You don't have to have booze.
Anyway, that's very
that's,
good.
That's what it should be.
Yeah, getting new kids on the block. Yeah,
that's what it should be.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then you just call them every day for a year. And I hate the phone, but I've done it. And anyway, she's let me off the leash now because I'm nearly a year. She's like, you don't have to call me every day. I was like, thank God.
It's good for everyone.
Definitely in the lockdown, me and my husband, Pete, we started drinking too much.
Yeah.
And then like a while ago, earlier this year, I was like, I think I'm drinking too much. A bit tired of being hungover. But I was like, but I really like drinking.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give it up. And I don't think I'm at the point where it's affecting my life that badly. I mean, like you're saying, I started looking around for like advice and help on the internet, you know, about cutting down. And I found there's not actually a lot out there. And I felt a bit like, it felt like when I was looking at social media and stuff, it felt like the choice is either, hey, it's wine o'clock, we're all shit-faced, I've got a necklace that says Prosecco on it, which I didn't feel like was me. And look, we acknowledge that we've maybe played a part in that culture in the past, but we've hopefully evolved a bit. Mm. But I feel the other end of the spectrum was kind of like, if you have two glasses of wine a night, you're an alcoholic and you have to give it up completely. And if you don't, and there's no kind of in-between
area. Mm. It's really tricky. For me personally, there's no way that I could moderate. And I know that I could try it, but I don't have the energy. Mm. Like, even if I could do it, for me, that would be exhausting. Mm. Constantly working that moderation would just be... So for me, as an addict, I know, and eventually I know I would just slip back into old habits.
Mm.
And so for me, I'm like, it's an all or nothing. And I think if you... It's really tricky because I struggle with grey area drinking and problem drinking. Most people can drink and end up neutral, right? So it's not done them any harm. It's not improved, you know, it's not improved their health, but it's neutral. They're on zero. That's fine.
Mm.
I just can't do that. And I think if you really have a problem with alcohol, if you're a real addict, then you have to not drink.
Okay. Mm.
Mm. But I think a lot of people do struggle with booze circumstantially, like lockdown, or they go through certain horrific things and it's a different thing, you know, and they know that they can stop or they know they can go backwards. My drinking was not going backwards in any way, shape or form. I was
really progressing.
I really was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like gold starring it all the way. Whoa. Next level. Yeah, every day.
Marathon. Go.
And it just, you know, for me, it just wasn't a question. And now I'm so... And now the funny thing is, I go out and I go out to like boozy things and all the rest of it. I don't miss the alcohol because it's literally for me now just ordering something different. And it took me a while to get there. Like social events at first were awful and I had massive anxiety. And that's largely why I picked up smoking again so heavily, because I thought, well, if I'm struggling at dinner, I can at least go out for a cigarette and and it doesn't look weird.
Mm.
But now it's like, I get it. Now I'm totally comfortable and I can walk in and I'm able to chat and talk. And actually sometimes you're like, actually it doesn't matter if I'm that funny or cool, because so many people are drunk and they're not going to remember anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just going to sit here and watch it. And this is great. And that's fun.
But also this great, like, because I quite like a non-alcoholic beer. Because I love it, because I love the taste of beer now.
Yeah.
Because I
blame myself.
Heavily influenced by Ellie. But I go, after the show, if we're having a curry.
Mm, cold beer.
A cold beer. But actually, you get the kick from the non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah, I do as well.
But you don't feel like, bleh, in the morning.
And a lot of people, if you're diehard AAers, a lot of them are like, no, you can't do it. I can do it. I've had this conversation with my sponsor. She can't do it. For me, I really enjoy the taste of beer and I love that I can drink that. It doesn't make me want to get the alcoholic beer. It tastes the same.
Yeah. Mm.
It's on a sunny day. It gives me the same kick after I finish painting my kitchen, crack open a non-alcoholic beer. It works for me.
Yeah.
But again, it's very it's very individual. Some people, it does trigger them. I know some people who can't even drink out of a stemmed glass because that will trigger them too much. Can't walk down the alcohol aisles in supermarkets.
Yeah.
I'm not there. And I can go out with people. I just know for me. And talking about that wine o'clock thing as well, actually, again, I can't hold any resentment towards that. because, I mean, I played a part in that massively as well. Mm. But now I have to go, the majority of people can drink a drink at 1 o'clock and it's fine.
Mm.
And I can't blame that for my alcoholism.
No.
At the end of the day, if I pick up a drink, it's because I picked up a drink.
So I think, yes, I think you're absolutely right. We're all different and it's about working, about which kind of person you are.
Yeah.
So Pete and I ended up working with this. She's called an alcohol coach, which I love because it makes it sounds like it's like you're in the corner of a boxing ring with a towel around your neck and someone's just handing you shots of vodka.
Yeah.
But she's called Stephanie Chivers and she's awesome. And we ended up doing some stuff with her where she you do like your value, you know, she asks you all the things like how much you're drinking and blah, blah. And I'd actually just done a month sober because we were running the marathon the year before. So I knew I could do it. So we talked about that. But then you do your values and why are you drinking and what are you trying to numb or what you talk about and that sort of thing. And in the end, we concluded that I was mainly drinking for pleasure. Just because I fucking really like it.
That's joyful.
Yeah.
And she was like,
and lovely with
she's
food.
Like, yeah. And she's like, that is joyful. But you are binge drinking as well. All right, not every night, but, you know, you're binge drinking enough to the point where you have to look at, you have to face the facts about how harmful that is for you over the longer term. And you don't know how susceptible you are to breast cancer, for example.
Yeah.
Except you sort of do because both your grandmas had it. Maybe don't drink 8 bottles of wine a week. So all of that sort of stuff. And I found that really helpful. But I do understand what you mean about, I still have to make decisions.
I think the difference is if you can't stop, if you know it's doing you damage or it's even a little bit of damage or a lot of damage and you can't stop, then you have probably got a problem.
Mm.
But if you can stop and you can moderate and you can pull back and that's not stress for you, then do that. Like, you know, it's you just have to decide what's best for you. Like, you can stop for a month. I could never stop for a month. I mean, I tried, but I always picked up again for sure. I just want to smash the stigma of what being an alcoholic is and an addict, because so many of us are hiding it, I think, especially women.
And there's been I was reading up about it recently, there's been a massive increase of alcohol drinking within our our age group and demographic. And you think, how much is that influenced by Prosecco Fridays and all that sort of stuff? Like, it is very, I think in the UK we're massive drinkers.
Oh, we're really unhealthy drinkers,
and everything associated with fun is about
booze.
Oh, we'll have a wine, we'll have a thing, when we celebrate we're gonna have
It's definitely embedded in the culture. We went to the secret cinema the other day and Pete was like, oh, you know, we were talking about whether or not to drive to the station and stuff. And Pete was, I was like, well, you'll probably want a drink at the cinema. He was like, oh, do you think there'll be alcohol there? And I was like, without even thinking, of course there will. It's Britain. It's Britain. There's alcohol everywhere. Mm. He bought me very kindly for a present last year. He bought me a knife skills class at a cooking school in London.
What a cool gift.
Yeah, so I thought it was really nice. So I turn up for this knife skills class and they're like, welcome, put your coat over there, wash your hands. Would you like a glass of wine? And I was like, really? This is a knife skill class. Like, you're about to hand me an incredibly sharp fish filleting thing and then ask me to take all the scales off that fucking salmon. I don't really feel like having a beer.
It's like having it like at a driving range. Like, oh, here's a loaded gun.
Yeah.
And would you like some vodka shots?
Yeah, which is quite a common thing in Florida. But I was like, wow. And at the time, again, I was working with Stephanie, so maybe I was a bit more conscious and a bit more sensitive to how embedded it is in the culture and all of that. But I was like, this is fucking mad.
I absolutely would have said yes to that glass of wine. I've never said no to a glass of wine. And by the way, when I go to the driving range, I used to have like 2, 3, 4 pints. We sometimes go to the driving range for fun because it's just fun hitting the shit out of balls. But I would always drink. Like, I would always drink. And I would decide on whether I was going to go somewhere if I thought I could drink. Sober things just were like, I used to say things like, oh, I don't trust people who don't drink. I mean, there's some serious weird projection going on there.
I know. When I'm on the dating apps and looking for, you know, new ones.
Oh, my gosh. I love these. I love hearing about your dating app adventures.
If they say they're sober, I sometimes swipe.
Yeah, I think you should.
Left. Because I go, oh.
Is left bad?
Yeah, left is...
But
I had a date with a guy the other day, and he hadn't drunk for 10 years. And I had a lovely time, and I thought, but I really like wine. And then I sort of made this sort of decision going, I don't think I can hang out with him. I like having a wine. I thought, why am I doing that? Why have I decided to get rid of it?
Well, it's, you know, at that point, it could just be like you want somebody who you've got things in common with. I mean, it doesn't have to be sinister.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You could just, I didn't, because Jimmy has never really drunk This is my husband. But he used to drink a little bit, and for nothing now for 5 years. Not because he's sober, but because he just doesn't like it.
Mm.
And I always struggled with drinking, because we'd have dinner and I'd like open a bottle of wine. And then I'd be like, is this drinking on my own, or is this like acceptable? Why am I drinking? You know, and so it did make a lot of, and I'm always really grateful I married Jimmy, to be honest, because I think if I'd married somebody who drank and partied, like I'd be dead.
Yeah.
Like 100%. So, you know, I think people just have to make their own decisions. But what I would say is, it's not as scary. Life is not shit. Like, people, I think, go, I'm never going to have any fun. I've never met anybody who's given up booze, and I've met a lot of people who've given up booze, and gone, well, my life was shit after I gave up booze. Everybody has said, my life's got better. That doesn't mean that everybody's life, you know, is shit and will be better without alcohol, but it's generally, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You will live a really long, fulfilling, happy life without booze.
Mm. Oh, it's going to be okay. I'm going to have that as my ringtone.
It's going to be all right.
Just cat going, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Oh, love it, love it.
Hello, we interrupt this stupid podcast to bring you an important message. This episode of the Scummy Mummies podcast is brought to you by the all-new Dacia Chugga, the award-winning seven-seater with plenty of space for family and friends and enemies, presumably, if you wanted to give
anyone
them
you like, really.
Anyone you like.
We are thrilled to be partnering with Dacia. Their fabulous all-new Dacia Jogger is made for adventure, just like us, really, Ellie. And like us, it can handle almost anything life throws at us.
Well, this is it. I mean, we've been parents for over a decade, unbelievably, and we've had a lot of stuff thrown at us, and some of it was pretty gross and sticky. We even used to play a game. Do you remember in the early episodes of the podcast called What's On Our Clothes This Week?
It had a jingle. What's on our clothes this week?
We should bring it back, I think. It's a good segment.
Excellent. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, they were such precious moments, weren't they, Ellie? Now, funnily enough, most of that also ended up in our cars.
Yes, or as we used to call our car, the bin on wheels.
I think it still is called the bin on wheels, Ellie,
it is, isn't it? It is, yes.
But now we're on tour travelling around with our very fabulous comedy show. We spend more time in a vehicle with your dad than our kids, which I think is a bit of an upgrade, really.
Well, depends.
Yeah, because he's our driver, which That's is great. True. Excellent. But he can be just as messy, to be fair. But he is more useful than our offspring, especially when it comes to a crisis, Ellie.
Oh, absolutely. Dad, or Jim, as you would call him.
Yes.
He's someone who can cope with all things sort of going wrong.
And he's here today! Woohoo! Welcome to the podcast, Jim.
Hello! Hello, readers!
That's his catchphrase. There it is.
Here he is.
Yes. Dad is our special guest for today. Welcome to the podcast, Dad. Are you pleased to be here?
Oh, I am indeed, yes.
That sounded sincere.
He's got a hot cup of tea. It's out of his house.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. So look, we got you on the podcast to talk about things going wrong, because we thought, who better to talk to about this than you, Father?
Of course, yeah.
Of course.
Mm. Now, Jim, I'm going to ask you, can you tell me about a time when things went wrong when Ellie was little? I mean, obviously she was born, but have you got an example about when things went wrong.
Oh, things went badly wrong on holiday when I decided unilaterally that Ellie and I were going to go for a ride on a bike.
This is why people just stick to cars, like the Dacia Jogger. Do you see what I did there? Yes. Anyway, carry on.
We had these bikes, so we got these bikes out, and Ellie said, I've never been on a bike before. I said, that's not a problem, you just get on it.
No, I'd been on a bike before. I could ride a bike. Yeah, I hadn't ridden a bike down a French motorway.
It wasn't a motorway, it was a very steep hill, though, I have to say.
And it was tarmac. And you carry on, Dad.
Well, then I went ahead because I was leading the way.
Oh, very good.
And all of a sudden I heard behind me, crutter, splash, bang, bang. And when I turned round, there was my daughter in a heap with a bike on top of her. Mm. So I thought, oh, things have gone badly pear-shaped here. But you were all right, though, weren't you? You survived.
Oh, I mean, I went to hospital.
I did go to hospital.
Some nice French people stopped their car and gave me some jus d'orange, as I believe they call it.
Yeah.
And yes, and then I went to the hospital and they sewed me up and I spent a night in hospital and couldn't use my hands for the rest of the holiday. So that is definitely, Helen, an example of something going wrong.
Yes, and then obviously Jim to the rescue, which is great.
And Dad, I would say, Dad, you're still pretty good if things go wrong, isn't he, Helen?
Yeah, he is. I'm thinking about one of the funniest things that went wrong recently would be when we were doing the walk in the Yorkshire Dales.
Oh, the 100-mile walk. The 100-mile walk.
And there was Ellie, Jim and my big brother. And the thing that went wrong was we encountered a lot of cows.
And I mean big cows, like big Yorkshire cows. Like not like little...
Like mini elephants.
Yeah. I was
quite unnerved. You were very unnerved.
Yeah, I wasn't having my best time then.
And Dad, just you marched in like Crocodile Dundee. Absolutely. In your silly hat with your sticks.
Well, I told them to go away using Anglo-Saxon expletives very loudly.
No, that's an example of when you were very good and calm in a crisis, Bryn, perhaps the rest of us weren't. But let's look at an example at the other end of the spectrum, Helen. Do you remember we were on tour, we were trying to get out of a multi-storey car park, and yes. What happened?
We contrived to get one side of the ticket
barriers. There was a barrier, yeah. And you put your ticket in, wasn't there? Yeah, and there was another barrier to get out. So
between two boom gates, yeah. Weren't we?
And we couldn't... Once we got one side of one of them, but then we had to get through the next one, which wouldn't move at all. And then it did move. Then it came down again too quickly, and the other one wouldn't. So we were stuck between the two of boom gates going up and down like two windscreen wipers.
The van was like a van sandwich. It was like a van wedge. We couldn't get out. We couldn't go back. We couldn't go forward. And Helen and I were like, oh, this is problematic. Not to worry. Let's press the little button and talk to the little person on the other end of the thing. What did you do, Dad? How did you handle
well,
that?
Well, it's technology.
Mental. Absolutely. Bonkers.
It was technology gone mad, you know.
It wasn't, you make it sound like it was the rise of the robots. It wasn't like AI had taken over.
It wasn't the middle of the nuclear weapons.
There's too many
of them things going up and down. You don't need two. Ridiculous.
And listen, if you think now he sounds perhaps overly irritable and angry about this, you should have heard him in the van. There was shouting, there was swearing.
I could see us being in that multi-storey car park between them two things going up and down for the next 12 hours. That was what I was
getting. And how long were we there? About 7 minutes.
Absolute tops. I'd say three. Yeah. Absolute tops. Yeah.
So word of advice to the readers. If you are a roadie for a feminist duo and you're driving a van...
Feminist duo!
You're driving a van, do not park it in multi-storey car parks.
Oh. Or, how about this? Here's a better piece of advice. Don't get a van... Get the all-new Dacia Jogger.
Oh, what an excellent idea. Plenty of room, Ellie.
Plenty of room.
It's a seven-seater.
It's a seven-seater, right? So we could fit all of us in it and all the props and all of that. In fact, we could fit all of my family and your family in there, Helen. We wouldn't have room for Dad. We could tow him behind on his bicycle.
Yeah, that'd be very nice.
Then drive down a hill in France, see how he likes it.
Yeah.
I think that would be excellent. Now, I think you can handle anything. I know you have a little bit of a tantrum here and there, Jim, but I think if you were a car, you would be the all-new Dacia Jogger.
Oh, yes. I think so, yeah.
Thank you so much, Dacia, for sponsoring this bit of the podcast, having Dad on as a guest star. Have you enjoyed it?
I have indeed, readers.
Visit dacia.co.uk to find out more.
All right, you can go now.
Yeah, get out. Now, enough alcohol chat.
Yes.
Tell us about your book. What's your book? Go on, plug your book.
Thought you'd never ask. So it's a, you know those really, I'm going to say it, awful baby journals you get that are like pink and blue, bunnies, first tooth, first lock of hair, mummy and daddy put a penis in a vagina and had a baby.
Mm.
It's a version of that that is inclusive, so it doesn't assume that it's a man and a woman having a baby. It's, you know, if you've adopted, if you've gone through IVF, if you're same-sex couples, trans, whatever it is, it's a book that you will be able to work with. And it does allow you to, like, fill in all of those milestones, like first tooth or whatever, but it also has room for you to fill in the stuff that you'll actually want to remember. You know, when it comes to like writing their wedding speech or writing their 21st speech, you don't go, well, she lost her first tooth on July the 21st, 1986. You know, you go, I remember the time when she cut her own fringe and rubbed my Charlotte Tilbury lipstick into my sheets. You know, that's the sort of stuff. Or the first time you parented hungover, or, you know, whatever it is, it's all in there. And there's also just like little bits in there from me that I hope would make somebody feel a bit better about finding it hard.
Yeah.
It's funny and it doesn't take itself too seriously. And to be honest, even if you don't fill it in, you'll still get a lot out of it.
Yeah. And I think people just want to feel normal.
Mm.
Or they
just want to know that they're not, that they're never the only one.
Yeah, exactly.
And that, you know, I get that all the time, messages going, oh God, I thought I was the only one. Mm. Right, we're not that special. Your problems are not that fucking unique, babe. They're just not. There's nothing that you've gone through that nobody else has been through before.
And it's sad that people are in that state where they are made to feel that way. They think, oh God, I'm not doing it right. I'm not ticking the boxes.
Well, and I think a lot of that comes from not talking about it. You know, they don't say it out loud. So nobody can go, nobody has a chance to go, oh, fuck, me too. Not me too, you know.
Yeah.
Me as well. And I think that's kind of what I really use the Instagram. This is where my 3 hour sleep is kicking in. Where I really use Instagram, it's like just to talk about it so that somebody can go, oh yeah, that's me as well. You know, if those people who have got it all perfect, I have nothing but admiration for them. God bless them. But the majority of us are tripping over Lego and struggling to, you know, take our laundry out of the washing machine before it gets mildewy.
In the last 24 hours.
Much shouting.
And what was really sweet, like yesterday afternoon, I said, look, I'm really sorry, Hugo. I was really shouty yesterday and, you know, I just wanted... And he said, but Mummy, you're just doing your best and you can only be you.
Yeah.
And I was like, thanks. But I do feel like I have to say that out loud to the kids sometimes. I'm like, I'm just juggling so many balls and... There were just some moments where I go, I can't step away. I can't just go to bed. I can't go, can you just do that? And that's so hard. And that's really hard where I just go, no, I've got to show up. And if I don't wash their school uniform, the kids aren't going to go to school in the morning. Like there's no, I can't delegate. And then that makes me feel very anxious. And I'm the only one paying the bills and all that sort of stuff. So there are just times where it just gets a bit overwhelming.
And I think that's what we're talking about, isn't it? When we're talking about the Lego, you know, that's the funny side of it. But actually the message is, it's a lot and that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's a lot whether you're on your own. It's a lot whether you've got help or a partner. Like, everybody's hard is different. And, you know, this, you know, I get loads of trolling because I sometimes bang on about how I have to solo parent sometimes. You know, when Jimmy goes away, he's just got back after 5 weeks. Well, I'm a single parent all day long and every, you know, and I'm like, I get it. And I don't know how you do it. Honestly, I don't. I don't know how people get up and go to proper jobs for 9 a.m. and get kids to school. I don't know how they do it. And I think they are superheroes. But that doesn't mean that, you know, people can't, in different situations, can't find things hard.
Yeah.
And you have to be okay with that. Like it has, it doesn't undermine your hard.
No.
But that is, that feeling of like not being able to leave or do anything or have your own space is really hard to manage.
I think it was only recently where I just had that kind of like,
but also the repair is really important, like saying sorry. Did your parents ever say sorry to you when they shouted at you?
Yes,
she's so well adjusted, isn't it?
I hate my mum.
Zero problems or issues.
Yeah, that's
my
it.
Mum did. My dad didn't. My mum bless you, I know you're listening, darling. If we had a bit of a blowout, she would say sorry.
I always do because
I hate dropping balls, which I'm very good at dropping balls.
You've got glass balls and plastic balls. So glass balls are ones you can't drop.
Yeah.
But plastic balls are ones you can fucking drop and pick up later.
Oh yeah, that's why I'm.
Yeah, that is covered the trick. Yeah.
Plastic balls.
Yeah, just all plastic balls.
Yeah, me too.
Balls. Can't get enough of them.
I love that. Loving the balls. I like your balls, Kat. Nice balls.
Listen, I love a good ball chat.
Now, before we head into the world that is Scummy Mummy Confessions, tell us about your podcast, Kat.
Okay. Oh, she's a multimedia nerd.
Oh my God,
But I don't think the book's called The First Time You Smiled or Was It Just Wind?
We didn't actually say the
name
of the book.
First Time You Smiled Could Just Wind. The podcast is called You're Never the Only One. And it's a solo podcast. It's just about, again, talking about those normal things. I hope it's funny. People tell me it is. I don't know. Just talks about the things that I fuck up during the week. We laugh about it. Other people write in and they tell us their fuck ups or fun times. And just half an hour every Monday morning where people can just get the right vibe to start off the week.
Excellent. Well, there we go. Now it is time, is it not, for the Scummy Mummy Confessions, Helen.
And here's share a story of parenting failure. I'm going to go first. My house is really gross. I can't open two doors. Often things are blocked. Myself. The sink in the upstairs area, bathroom, is often blocked. And I just think my kids put really gross things down it. And I was down here with a friend was over from Australia, so obviously the kids were badly behaved and the house was a mess. And Hugo was upstairs for ages. And he came back downstairs and he said, "Don't worry, Mummy, I think I've unblocked the sink." He had squeezed half a tube of Nair hair removal cream into the sink.
Do you know what, though? That's actually genius.
And he was bloody like, he said, well, it removes hair. Surely it will remove the gunch in the sink.
Fucking too right. Probably half hair anyway. Yeah. Did it work?
No.
Oh.
It got more smelly. And then the next morning, I went off for my big run. And then Matilda decided to paint her face green to be Gamora and then didn't. And then just washed a whole lot of face paint. So it was just this, when I got home, the sink was absolutely full. I just got home from the marathon. I was very tired. The sink was full of black, like, gunge. And it was at the absolute peak. And I couldn't, like, brush my teeth. I brushed my teeth over the toilet. And I was very sad. And it was full of hair removal cream and face paint from my really awesome children. And then last night, because I've got a nanny staying because we're doing a gig, I got a toilet unblocker to unblock the sink, and I finally did it, and it's less shit. So, but it was just like 9 o'clock last night, and the kids are going mama blah blah like 700 things, and I'm like pumping the sink with a toilet unblocker.
That's not the kind of pumping you want to be doing, is it?
Really? Not. Yeah,
do you know, so you can get these wicked things. I see them on TikTok. They're really...
Like a coil or something.
Yeah, and then you just pull it all out. And it's like... Ooh. It's satisfying, like squeezing.
Yes, exactly.
I don't know if this is a confession. This is a confession about me being perhaps overly tidy or overly neat. So I bought... my loos... We live in a very hard water area.
We do.
You know when you're... Your loo gets lime scale. It gets that sort of brown crust.
Orangey, pinky brownie.
Yeah.
I know it well.
You put the toilet duct down, it doesn't work. So I Googled it, and I ended up buying a toilet pumice stone. Did you know these exist?
No!
Fuck me.
You exfoliated your toilet bowl.
Fucking hell.
Shut the front door.
You get them on Amazon. I think they're like £7 for like four of them.
Very reasonable.
I'm going to give them to everyone for Christmas. And you shove it in the toilet and you like chip off the fucking...
So your hand's in the toilet water?
Well, no, they're special. They have a handle.
Oh, okay,
great. Plastic handle and then the pumice on the end. I mean, right. It depends how much you want to get into it.
Yeah. It's going to be a bit of splashback, isn't it? If you're vigorous.
A long marigold.
Yeah. But you get right, and it just chips off. And honestly, it's one of the most satisfying things that's ever happened to me.
Can you use it in your kettle? I mean, obviously not after you've used it in your loo, but could you like...
I don't know. I think it would depend if you have a plastic kettle. It's quite scratchy. It might scratch the metal.
Because there are some things that, like, you do as an adult that I don't do. You know, people, I think, if I was able to do that, I would feel like an adult, like cleaning my washing machine.
I want to put up a shelf.
Like, lime scaling those things that people find the time to do. And I'm like, I just never do that shit.
Well, I'm telling you, get a pumice stone. It will only take you to get it on Amazon. It'll take you 2 minutes and it'll change your life.
I am here for it.
My friend Nikki came round and I was like, mate, look at this. And she looked at me and I was like, insane. And then she looked at the toilet and went, oh. And I gave her one. She was like, I can't wait to go home and use it. And I was like, no, you're welcome. You're welcome. Do you have a scummy mummy confession
for us? My real scummiest moment, I think, was when Beau was really 6 months old and I couldn't understand why she wasn't sleeping. I mean, she was 6 months old, but like nothing was working.
Yeah.
Anyway, one day she got really sick and I had to take her to the hospital because she never took meds by the mouth. She would just vomit. She refused. So I had to take her to hospital to have them shoved up her bum.
Pessaries, yeah.
She had flu and she was lying on the bed in the hospital and I'm stroking a little head. You know when they're babies and they're still and you think they're not really very well. Oh. Stroking a little head. As I'm stroking it, this thing starts crawling out of her hair and I'm like, what the fuck is that? Now, I've never had nits. I've never had nits. Billy had never had nits. And I was like, well, she's 6 months old. She can't have nits. I was looking. I was like, she was infested. So then I took her home. Bear in mind, she's full of cold. So she sat in a high chair. She's got snot just running down her face. I'm like de-lousing the kid. I'm having to put cling film over her head because babies just like hit their heads.
Yeah.
So she sat there. She's got knit stuff on her head. She does a massive sneeze. Snot everywhere. And I turn around and the cat just goes like this. And just... projectile vomits all over the fucking kitchen, and I was like, I'm out, I'm done, I never want to do, and I don't want to see anybody ever again. It was
honestly, can everybody stop?
emitting shit from their various orifices. I can't cope anymore.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then obviously after I got rid of all the knits, that kid slept like a fucking chick. She had it. She was just itchy.
Oh.
How awful is that?
Baby. Oh, but you wouldn't know.
Nobody expects a six-month-old to have knits.
No.
But then our nanny was great and she was, I say nanny, that's elevating it. She was like our babysitter, but she helped me, you know. But she was also working in nurseries, so then I was like, that's probably why.
Oh, mate.
Poor kid, she was infested.
Oh, well, what a lovely story. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that with us, my love.
Is that scummy enough?
That is quite excellent.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Kat. Your book, The First Time You Smiled, or Was It Just Wind, is out now, and your podcast, You're Never the Only One, every Monday.
Every Monday for first season, 8 weeks.
Excellent times. Marvellous. We have got a live comedy show, which you could come and see. We've got shows right the way up till Christmas. We just announced two new gigs in, is it where?
Where? W-A-R-E, not where.
Yes.
Where?
Yes.
That's in Hertfordshire.
We're going to Farnham.
Yes, on the 13th. Stroud, tickets are nearly sold out for that. The lovely Leatherhead, and we were going to be in North Finchley, which is not far. Too far from you.
Yeah, it's quite far.
Yeah, okay, everything's far.
Bath, closer. Excellent. Dorking, yeah. Come to Dorking.
Please come. We've got lots and lots and lots of gigs, but yes. Go to scummymummies.com and click on live shows.
Yes,
but
and next year we're doing our greatest hits tour, so we haven't got all the tickets on, but lots of tickets are already on sale.
Can yes. I just say, I'm fucking proud of you two. It's incredible.
Thank you, Kat.
Sat here just listening on your live gigs, actual real life tour.
Kat, it's always an absolute joy to hang out with you, pissed or sober. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having
me. She's still fun.
Still fun.
Thank you for having me. I love you both.
Oh, I love you. And thank you very much for listening. Love you too. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's funny because I'm starting therapy on Thursday. We've done a lot of couples therapy, but I'm starting individual therapy on Thursday to unpack that first year.
Sorry, I've got this self-cleaning
coffee machine. It's like a self-cleaning coffee machine.
Yeah, it's like a vagina. Sorry, back to your darkest moment of your life.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.